Hello?
Tom.
Yes.
Hi, everybody. It's Joel Whitaker, editor of Kane's Beverage News Daily. And today, this afternoon, on this expert interview, we're interviewing Tom Stefanacki, who is the president of Deutsch Family Wines and Spirits. Tom,
it's
good
Tom,
afternoon. How are you?
Tom Stefanacki.
Tom Stefanacki. You know, I lived in New Jersey for 30 years, and you would think I would have that down, wouldn't you? But,
no, it's only ever pronounced correctly when I'm in Italy. Over there, I'm like Smith over there.
Very good. Well, you're very kind. So how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. So I want to ask you three or four very basic questions. And the first one is basically, you know, where do you see the business of Deutsch today? And secondly is, where do you all want to take it in the next 3 to 5 years? And then finally, how are you going to get there? In other words, I'm just asking for your business plan, that's all. So
our business is very healthy, I'm grateful to say, growing at a good clip. And what we're probably most excited about is it's diversifying rapidly.
And what led you all to the diversification thing? I mean, you started out as a wine company, and then you got into spirits just a very few years ago. What's led you to the diversification approach here?
I think any good consumer goods company recognizes humbly that they don't lead, they follow, and we follow consumers. So consumer interests in alcohol beverage are diversifying, and if we're going to be meeting consumer needs, which is our fundamental objective, then we have to move with consumers. So our diversification is really being led by trying to meet consumers' needs, and as they have needs for a wider variety, we're offering a wider variety. We're doing it in a disciplined way because we're really only interested in being in spaces of things that we can bring some scale to. But we're trying to satisfy, you know, a wide breadth of consumer needs.
Good. Now, I noticed that you currently import, I think, from 9 countries in California. My friends in California, of course, love to point out that they, standing alone, would be the 7th or 8th largest economy in the world. And you do 30 different wines, which, considering that you all started when, back in 1981, I think, does sure indicate a very disciplined approach to the business.
Started in 82, 31 years young, and, you know, started out as a regional company, exclusively focused on imports, and our more recent diversifications have been into spirits. But also, we've done more acquisitions and new brand creation from California than any other appellation as of late. So that has been a big part of our recent diversification.
And does that sort of suggest where you intend to go in the next few years? Or do you have something that you're planning that will be sort of a different approach in the next couple of years here?
I mean, we have kind of a two-pronged approach. Yellowtail is still the largest portion of our business, and we have significant resource against Yellowtail and think that Yellowtail can meet consumer needs across an even wider variety of areas. So Yellowtail is a big focus, and then we really look at everything else separate from that, and everything else is focused on where our consumers are going to be. So we're seeing California continue to grow its share of the total wine business when it is already the largest portion of the wine business in the U.S. So our obsession with California is really based on consumers' obsession with California. We're still well under indexed there. We're fortunate that we have the hottest wine brand from California right now, which is a brand called Josh Sellers. And why do I say it's the hottest wine brand? It has the highest sales per point of distribution as measured by Nielsen of any wine in its price point. So it's a $12.99 North Coast Appellation wine, and it's on fire. So that's a real driver of growth. But in addition to that, you know, we've had a range of new innovation and other acquisitions from California over the last couple of years.
And I gather you think there's much more room to go with California there.
I think there's tremendous opportunity with California. I think the share of the business done by California is likely to grow off what is already a huge base. I think there's tremendous diversity in Appalachians within California. And for us, you know, we're still have a quite a low development in terms of the percentage of our business that we're doing in California. So yes, you'll see us continue to do new things in California, probably more new things in California from a wine perspective than any place else. But you're going to also see us continue to do a lot of new things on Yellowtail, all of which are coming from Australia, and we'll launch three new things in the next 6 months just on the Yellowtail brand alone.
Really?
Yes.
Can you give us a hint as to what those three new things will be?
Yes. So we're coming with, in February, we will come with Pink Moscato, which is a follow-up to the tremendous success that we had with White Moscato, where we did 450,000 cases in the first year of the launch. So Pink Moscato will be in addition to that. We're coming with what we're calling Big Bold Red, which will be a red blend from a quality and sort of style standpoint that will be similar to Ménage à Trois and Apothic, but at a price point that's, you know, 30% less.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're coming with a sweet white, which is a complement to our sweet red roux, which also has been a very successful launch. We launched sweet red roux about a year ago, and it has this what's called a prismatic label, this red sparkly label that really has caught on with millennial consumers in sort of the 20 to 21 to early 30s age group.
I bet you that just pops off the shelf with that prismatic label too.
Absolutely does.
So that's really exciting stuff. And you know, it's the way you discussed Yellowtail as being sort of one key part of your business, and there's everything else which you're trying to grow very nicely here. It almost sounds like you've read the Brown-Forman playbook, because that seems to me to be what they've done with Jack Daniel's. You know, they have that there and they push that, and then they work hard on everything else. And I think that helps them grow.
Well, I would welcome that comparison, because I think Brown-Forman's been tremendously successful. So I would hope to have similar success. And I think, you know, for us, our non-Yellowtail business is in its third consecutive year of 20% growth or more. So our sort of development business is growing very rapidly. And then we have, you know, the second largest wine brand in the U.S. That is growing low single digits. This year it's posting, right now we're up 2.5%. So we're posting the best growth that we've had on Yellowtail in years, but it's still modest growth. So it is an interesting model for us. On our non-Yellowtail business, we are an aggressive growth company, and on our Yellowtail business, we're managing a mature brand. I would say from a mentality standpoint as a company, the profile here is much more indicative of an aggressive growth company. We've added staff every single year over the last 3.5 years that I've been here, right through the financial crisis. We added staff in 2008, added staff in 2009, and ongoing. So the mentality here is very much growth-driven, even though our largest brand is only experiencing modest growth.
Very good. And I presume that means you're also looking for staff this year.
We hired more people this year. And, you know, I've really particularly staffed up in what we call our strategic account group. As we've seen, you know, these larger customers continue to gain share, it has, for us, encouraged us to add additional category management staff and staffing to support those customers that are becoming an increasingly large part of our business. We've done it differently than some. We have not done that by taking staff out of on-premise or out of independent channels. We've added them as a net gain, because we still see our independent customers and our on-premise customers as critically important. So we want to add capability in strategic accounts rather than rob that resource from other channels.
That sounds like a really good idea, too. It really does. So that's very impressive. Now, exactly what type of people are you going to be looking for this year?
So in terms of roles that we've added recently, I would say category management has been the largest portion of increased staff. I mentioned we've done several acquisitions. So as we've done acquisitions, we've also added brand management staff. You know, so Gerard from Napa is still relatively new to our portfolio. Josh and Joseph Carr is only just now a year old. And then we've also created brands from scratch. So we've created Enza with our partner in Italy, which is a Prosecco brand. We have created a red blend called Flirt with Vintage Wine Estates, and we co-own that brand with Pat Roney, who's also the owner of Gerard. We've revamped Cigars Inn and relaunched that brand, and we own that also with Pat. So, you know, the combination of brands that we've acquired as well as brands that we've created has also added roles in our marketing department in terms of brand management roles.
Good, excellent. And speaking about marketing, what is your philosophy on how you market? Are you do you do a lot of consumer advertising, or do you focus on trade, or is that now evolving as the company evolves?
I think it's very much a function of the brand and who that brand is trying to reach and how they're trying to reach them. And we run the whole gamut from small brands where the niche consumer is a small group of fine wine enthusiasts, which has a totally different approach than Yellowtail, you know, where we will spend $7 million on, you know, national television advertising. So we run the gamut. I'd say Yellowtail is probably the marketing mix that looks the most like a big CPG brand. I mean, Yellowtail has more Facebook fans than any wine brand on the planet.
Really?
We are the largest spender in terms of TV advertising of any wine brand on the planet. So Yellowtail is, you know, is a brand where we have the scale, and it's efficient for us to reach a very, very large and diverse consumer base with traditional advertising. That's very different than a brand like Adult Chocolate Milk, which is a spirit brand, where the majority of our activity on that occurs through one of our founders who has a blog and through the work that we do in stores introducing the brand through samplings and special events. So, you know, one is a grassroots approach that's quite targeted, and the other is a mass marketing approach. And all of our brands have different profiles. We have a brand called Hobnob. It's targeted at millennials. We'll do just under 200,000 cases of that this year, and the vast majority of the activity is digital. You know, we're talking to a 25 to 35-year-old consumer, and we are reaching them through Facebook, through the website, through other digital outlets. So that because that consumer is so plugged in and does so much of their discovery through online and electronics, that's the way that brand reaches people. So it really, really varies based on the brand and who the consumer is.
You know, you sound like almost the first company I recall talking to that has actually tailored their advertising and marketing activities very specifically by brand, as versus sort of having a, you know, a global corporate world, we're going to put all our money into Facebook, or, you know, we're going to do a lot of magazine advertising or whatever. You really do seem to be very careful on how you target.
I think you have to be if you're going to be effective. I mean, we have a lot of brands that we don't have a Facebook page for, and I've had brand managers say to me, we're going to create a Facebook page for this brand. And my question is, you know, what need is that going to meet for your consumer? And that Facebook's really a great medium for consumers who use Facebook. Not all of our brands target consumers that are heavy users of Facebook. So it isn't for everyone. And I think if you think about wine, I'll tell you, if you're a marketer, you couldn't pick a bigger challenge than wine. You have a very promiscuous consumer base. And as they learn more about the category, they actually become less loyal. So it's a fascinating place to try to be a marketer, and I think it's critical that you put your precious resources to good use, because combined with our difficulty with consumer lack of loyalty, we also have a margin structure that is not as favorable as say selling laundry detergent is. So it's a little easier for Tide than it is for Hobnob. So I think given that environment, you have to be really, really prudent about where you're going to put your money, because it's not easy to reach consumers.
And yet with Yellowtail, you seem to have really hit the secret for building a wine brand. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, you just can't build a big wine brand because, of whatever reason. And yet you guys seem to have done it very successfully.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever heard of the book Blue Ocean, but it's a strategy book that is probably now, I guess, 7 or 8 years old. I think it's the best book I've ever read on strategy. And in that book, they talk about companies that have been able to go, create what's called a blue ocean. So Yellowtail is one of the examples that they use in the book, and they talk about the fact that when Yellowtail launched, it was able to source a lot of its drinkers from other alcohol beverage categories besides wine, and introduced a lot of people to wine for the first time. A lot of beer drinkers, they estimated, 20% of the drinkers of Yellowtail in the first couple of years came strictly from the beer category. And I think what Yellowtail did is it had incredibly high quality at great value, and it was done in a really simple way. It demystified wine and made wine more approachable, but also presented a really big quality leap at that price point. I think it still represents excellent quality for the money. Competitors have gotten better. I think the gap that we had over competitors in quality is not as wide as it was when we came out in 2001. But so Yellowtail had these early years where it was in a blue ocean. It wasn't a bland picture of a vineyard and trying to be something that played on the complexity or the pretentiousness of wine. It actually did the opposite. It made wine simple and approachable. And if you remembered that the black and yellow one was Shiraz, great. If you just liked the black and yellow one, then that was just fine too. So that really, Yellowtail really had a running start where it was by itself. Competitors are quite good. They certainly have gotten better at what they do, and I think it is no longer in a blue ocean. There are a lot of tough competitors in our space, but it's very helpful when you can gain scale, because it allows you the resources to do a lot of things to meet your consumers' needs. It's much more difficult when you don't have scale.
Yeah, it is. There's no question about that. It can be a real struggle sometimes if you don't have scale. No, absolutely no question about that. So this is all very good. We've talked about your marketing plans, and we've talked about your staffing needs. I presume, well, I shouldn't presume this. I should ask the question, are you happy with your wholesalers?
Yeah, I would say overall we're happy with our wholesalers. I think wholesalers have a challenge that is not an easy one, which is in order for them to make those businesses more profitable, they have needed to consolidate. And in consolidating, you now in most markets have two very large distributors. It wasn't very long ago that you had three and four big distributors in those markets. Now you're down to two, and it is not uncommon in a large state for you to have a distributor partner who has 450 suppliers and 25,000 SKUs. Those numbers are not out of whack. So I think distributors have been very effective at consolidating, and I think learning to manage all of that, organize it, prioritize it, and keep all of us demanding suppliers happy is not an easy job. And they haven't cracked the code on it yet. None of them have. And I think our role as suppliers is not to criticize that. It's to help figure out how that can be done effectively. And I think improvements are being made every year, and we're fortunate that we work with excellent partners. So we have significant amounts of our business with Southern Wine and Spirits, with Glazer's, with Martinetti, to a lesser degree with Charmer, and they are all very good operators. And then we have smaller partners, Allied and others, that are also very good operators. But I think it's a work in progress between supplier and distributor to figure out how to optimize this post-consolidation environment. It's not easy.
And it sounds to me like it would be almost impossible for you to meet. Let me rephrase this. A number of years ago, August Bush III sort of demanded that his wholesalers give 100% share of their mind to Budweiser and other AB products. And it sounds to me like it would be very, very difficult for any supplier to demand that of their distributors in the wine space at any rate.
Well, how did that work out for AB, right? most of those distributors now are representing, 70 or 80 different craft brands and probably making, a third of their profit from those brands. So I think there's a certain humility that you have to have, especially in the wine business, where, the largest wine brand has a fraction of the share of, the number five beer brand. So you just don't have the same level of consumer loyalty to wine, and it means you're not going to be able to dictate the way a wholesaler runs a business. So you have to come up with a way to work with them as a partner and find mutual benefit. And I think that it isn't leverage, it's cooperation that wins at the end of the day.
Good. You know, your question, how did that work out for AB, just made me focus for just a second. I think the timing of that 100% share of mine thing may have been a little autobiographical thing of August the 3rd anyway, because my recollection is that he made that demand after he had led the company into snack foods and bottled water and wines, all of which did not prove to be very successful for them. So he may have been, saying to himself, I have to give 100% share of mine to the beer biz, and that may be
interesting.
May be what's behind it. Speaking of 100% share of mine, what got you into spirits?
I found my way into spirits because I was in the beer business. So I started out in the beer business and worked for a Coors distributor, and then went to work for Coors Brewing in Colorado, and then found my way to Guinness, which was owned by Diageo. And was natural progression there to sort of go from beer to spirits, because spirits was the core business. So that was me personally. For us as a company, what got us into spirits was the observation that spirits were likely to be less dominated and controlled by four or five big companies in the future, even though that had been the past. And we started to see the rise of a lot of craft producers. And we also noticed that most of the meaningful innovation wasn't coming from the biggest company in the business. It was coming from really creative entrepreneurs. So we saw an opportunity that we could play a role and represent brands that maybe weren't going to get attention if they were in a very, very large supplier that would place most of its focus on a smaller number of huge brands. And that bet has paid off. We get offered brands every day. We've been very selective about what we've added to the portfolio. But, spirits will be, this year, spirits are going to be over half of our profit growth. We will do about $40 million in spirits this year. It'll be our second full year in the spirits business. So it is now a business that operates in the black for us. So by the third year, it became profitable. And we're really optimistic. But we see an opportunity to represent brands. And back to the consumer, we think consumers' demand for a variety of offerings in spirits is going to expand just as it did in wine. So vodka is really big and really important. That's not going to change. But you're seeing now a lot of the vodka growth coming from flavors. You're seeing category-bending brands. We represent one called Liqueur 43 that is a very rapidly growing, spirit brand. What category do you sort of put it in? So I think you're going to see a lot of variety in spirits and a lot of really interesting creative things come from entrepreneurs where a company like Deutsch could help scale them. And I think the future is really bright for spirits and for Deutsch in the spirits business.
Yeah, that certainly sounds like that's the case, and it sounds like that could be a whole nother interview, but I know that you've got some time constraints, so we want to respect those. Is there anything that we haven't asked you that you would like us to have asked?
Yeah, I guess one other thing that we didn't talk about that I think is unique to Deutsch and maybe some of your audience would be interested in is, we've done a lot of acquisitions and a lot of brand creation, and that may not be different than other companies. I think what is different with Deutsch is we have partners on virtually every brand we own. So our approach is different, and our approach, and I'll give you an example, Joseph Carr, who is the founder of Joseph Carr and Josh, we partnered with and bought half of that trademark just over a year ago, and our partners with Joseph Carr, who's also, by the way, a really a good friend and a heck of a good guy, and we bought that business. Josh was 30,000 cases, and Carr was about 20,000 cases, and we'll do 120,000 just of Josh and 30,000 just of Carr at the end of 1 year. So we've been able to help Joe scale that business. He had a great concept. The wines are high quality. The concepts were right. He didn't have the ability on his own to scale that. We've helped him scale that business. We've done something very similar with a lot of other brands in our portfolio. So I think that's something that makes Deutsch unique. And I think as brands get traction, and they sort of get through the first stage of growth where it becomes clear to them that they have a brand that consumers want, but they find getting scale to distribution, and especially as you get into dealing with much larger, more sophisticated customers, they find they need to have weight and leverage in those areas, but they're not ready to sell their business or their brand. I think that's a unique space we occupy. And because we've had partnerships going back to the very first brand that we represented, we're somebody who has found it effective to work with partners. And I think that's unique to our model. And I think it's an area where we're going to have tremendous success because there are a lot of brands who need capital, but are not ready to give up the reins and sell the business. So that's exciting for us. We find people really like the idea that they can remain in the business, and we work well with a variety of people. So that's part of our strategy, I think, that it may be unique to Deutsch.
I think that is. At any rate, you're the first person to ever have expressed it to me in those terms, and I think that's a very good concept. So it'll be interesting to see how things develop for you all. Well, it certainly sounds like you're going to have a terrific year, like you've got a lot going on here. I presume that if somebody wants to become a partner, you're open to talk to them.
We're absolutely open to talk, and I think we get a lot of opportunities, and we're really looking for wines and spirits that have proven that there is a consumer need being met, so that there are turns that are there, and our machine can get very, very rapid distribution. We're probably less interested in things that are case one, that are totally unproven. I think for things like that, folks are better off, getting in a few markets and validating that they're meeting a consumer need. Once we know something meets a consumer need, then our machine can put it in very, very significant distribution quickly.
Very interesting. Well, that'll give us a chance to make another date at some point, Tom, and go forward and explore this a little bit further. And look at the spirit side in more detail, and also see how the brand development process, which is, I guess, is what we can call that, is coming along. So I really appreciate your time. This has been a fabulous interview, and we wish you all the best. for this coming year.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. I enjoyed the conversation and appreciate you giving us the chance to talk a little bit about what we're doing.
Thank you so much, and we will talk to you again, and we wish all of our listeners a happy day and a successful year also. Bye now.
Great. Happy New Year. Take care.
Bye-bye.